KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. This is your host, Noah Bristol. Julianne Schwartz, Michelle Coppola, and I bring you this show on the fourth Friday of every month at 10 a.m., or you can listen online anytime at kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. We're on the air to give voice to the urgent animal welfare and rights issues happening locally, regionally, and worldwide. And today we welcome to the show Matt Johnson, investigator and press coordinator for Direct Action Everywhere, or DXE. Direct Action Everywhere is a global network of activists working to achieve animal liberation in one human generation. And DXE employs a wide variety of tactics in pursuit of this goal, including nonviolent direct action, such as the open rescue of suffering animals from factory farming and slaughterhouse operations. But Matt's going to be able to tell you a lot more about that than I can. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Noah.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Could you start by just telling us about the current vision and direction of Direct Action Everywhere? Like, what does the road to animal liberation look like, and what does animal liberation mean?
Absolutely. So the founding idea behind Direct Action Everywhere was we were looking at what has succeeded in successful social movements throughout history and sort of applying that to the animal rights context, where frankly, there wasn't a ton of growth or too many reasons for hope. Particularly, this is 2013 when Direct Action Everywhere was founded. And so, like, what are we doing wrong? What lessons can we learn from successful social movements throughout history, from the civil rights movement to the gay rights movements, women's suffrage, and so on? And what history tells us is that what it takes is not for us to necessarily go around and persuade 51% of people to be on our side on every little issue and knock on their door and have a conversation with them. But what it takes is a much smaller subset of the population to take nonviolent direct action, to take it to the streets, to in some cases take significant personal risk. And that will really cause that mass uprising. Dr. Erica Chenoweth did some very prominent research on this and has found that with all movements over hundreds of years that were able to mobilize 3.5% is the magic number of a population to take sustained nonviolent direct action. They won 100% of the time. So that was kind of the founding idea. So it's all about making that happen. How do we take that action? How do we mobilize massive amount of people to do that? And so it's from protests to open rescues to mass actions, mass open rescues, where we sometimes have hundreds of people marching onto farms in broad daylight. And the vision longer term would be to, instead of hundreds, maybe have that be hundreds of thousands of people outside of a slaughterhouse, just bringing everything grinding to a halt, sparking a societal conversation, and really creating that change that we're all looking for.
So in the end, in these past and present movements and projecting forward with the animal rights movement, the majority of people's hearts and sympathies are on the side of that movement, but it takes a far fewer number of people to actually catalyze that change and catalyze differences in the justice system and how we treat each other and other non-human animals. Is that right?
Yeah, well said. That's exactly right. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he talks about how we're not creating it, in his case, and we're drawing on those lessons, they're not creating attention, they're bringing to the surface the tension that already exists. So people, in the 60s, they were apathetic, largely not hateful. They didn't have hate in their hearts. They were just, it just wasn't in front of their face. And likewise today, people hear about a ventilation shutdown. People hear about gestation crates. They're horrified. They want no part of it. And it's just because it's kept beneath the surface, and that conversation is not happening on a wide enough scale. And that's really, we don't have to convince people of some, far flung ideal. We really need to just connect people with the values that they already hold.
And in those movements, the majority of the public seeing images and video and reading stories about the injustice that those activists face, that was a huge catalyst for them then placing their sympathies and their votes on the side of the civil liberties. And now we have easier access to images and videos than ever before in human history. So is that something that DXC tries to take advantage of, social media and live streaming, things like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Social media, mainstream media, these are the tools that are available to us. And that's a huge area of emphasis for the work that we're doing. Getting coverage in the New York Times, getting, like Glenn Greenwald, the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist to cover our work and get that message out there. And we're seeing the fruits of this labor. We're seeing people within the industry coming to us and saying, hey, this, I obviously, if somebody gets a job working for a factory farming corporation, they're not any sort of self-described animal rights activist. But over the course of time and exposure, that Dr. Gene Sharp talks about in his book Waging Nonviolence, talks about eroding the pillars of support. So it's not just this fringe 2% of the population or whatever that are animal rights activists. It's just ordinary people. And when you work at a place where your own employees are starting to say, your own coworkers are being like, man, I really don't know about all this stuff, then it really can really be, demoralizing in a ultimately a very positive way that the people who are caught up in this. And really to go a step beyond that, it's demoralizing in a really, really depressing and exploitative way, because nobody wants to work in a slaughterhouse. Practically, 1% of the population are psychopaths. So we'll put that one aside for a second. The rest of us don't want to work there. And so
the majority of workers probably just looking for a job.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, so it's, yeah. I mean, so it's, immigrants, you know, that were the vulnerable populations that are put in those situations, and the apathetic masses are, you know, talking about how much they love animals while the vulnerable people are doing their dirty work for them.
And one way that you discover the most grievous injustices is from whistleblowers within the industry, right? Common workers who are not animal rights activists, but they see that what they are being told to participate in is wrong, and then they contact you. That's happened, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And most prominently here in recent months with the ventilation shutdown that was happening at this farm owned by Iowa Select Farms, which is the fourth largest pork producer, or I'll put pork in air quotes here, you can't see it on the audio, in the country. And it actually came forward to us even before this ventilation shutdown was happening, and it was just the normal course of business pre-coronavirus, where they were completely disregarding their permitting standards, saying you have to, you can have X number of pigs in a certain building, and they were going well beyond that as a normal course of business. This isn't about supply chain overload or, you know, this whole thing with ventilation shutdown. This is just ruthless pursuit of profit.
Let's rewind a little bit, because you said ventilation shutdown. Probably not all of our listeners know what that is.
Oh, yeah. this is the very, you know, benign euphemism, ventilation shutdown. It describes this, depopulation, to use another benign sounding euphemism, where they're killing off all these pigs. So when coronavirus hit, there were all these outbreaks at these slaughterhouses, or these poor workers already very much exploited, getting coronavirus in huge numbers. There was one plant in Iowa, 58% of their employees in one instance tested positive for coronavirus.
Yeah, some of the largest outbreaks in the United States were at these factory farming operations.
So these slaughterhouses have workers simply don't, they're like, I'm not going to risk my life to go to work today. So these slaughterhouses are shutting down or running at very minimal capacity. And so on down on whichever direction in the supply chain, there's all these pigs that have been bred into existence that they're planning to send to the slaughterhouse. They got nowhere to go with them. They're like, well, we have to kill them. Which, you know, let's just say for a second that we accept that premise. Okay, the pigs have to just be killed. Well, how do you go about doing that? Well, if you could spend, you know, whatever it is, maybe $5 and do some sort of lethal injection or a gunshot or something like that. Obviously, that's plenty horrifying from an animal rights, animal liberation perspective, beyond unacceptable. But what they actually did was just beyond, you know, a level far beyond, because that costs money to do it these other methods. So the cheapest method, completely setting aside any consideration of animals, is this what's called ventilation shutdown. So that's when they load in thousands of pigs inside of a barn. And apologies in advance, this is just, even just to hear the audio, me explaining it is horrifying. You can't even believe this is real. Like, this is really happening in America in 2020. Load in thousands of pigs inside a barn. They close off all the ventilation ports. They put like insulation over it, so there's not any air coming in or out. Close the doors, close the windows, seal everything up. They pump in heat, they pump in steam, and over the course of several hours, these pigs are really cooked alive. We were able to capture hidden camera video of this, and we were able to capture audio. That audio, you hear the pigs in extreme distress, and then 2.5 hours later, you're still hearing the sounds of some pigs that are alive. So, you know, varying like how long are these pigs in this like just horrifying state of being tortured? At the end, or towards the end, I guess they'll open the doors and the steam will come out. The workers will go through and they'll look around. They're kind of making a casual stroll for pigs that are moving around or making noise, and they have bolt guns, and they will finish them off with a bolt gun shot to the forehead. Kind of one even further level of depravity to this whole thing is that they're very likely, some of these pigs are still alive and are still conscious, and this is an opinion that we've a veterinary opinion from a registered veterinarian saying, well, you're very likely going to have some pigs that are conscious but are not moving around and not making noise. And with this casual stroll that we saw them taking on our hidden camera, they're not going to see that. And so then the next phase of this whole thing is when they bring in the heavy equipment and they're scooping these pigs up and dumping them into a semi-truck trailer. So you have still live pigs, very likely, being scooped up, dumped into these trailers. You know, eventually they'll succumb to heat, suffocation, crushing, something like that. So just unimaginable horror show.
Basically, these animals who have a higher intelligence than many other animals in the animal kingdom, not that that matters in the capacity for suffering, they're locked in a steam room, basically set on overdrive, until they either die or are incapacitated, and then they are killed with other means. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
American Veterinary Medical Association deemed this as a humane way of quote unquote depopulation. Is that right?
So the AVMA listed as acceptable in constrained circumstances, which they don't very clearly define. And so, again, we're deviating far from the standard of animal rights and animal liberation, but to just inform folks, there's one thing, for example, if it's like African swine fever, which is highly contagious and highly deadly among pigs, and they would say, well, you know, this is something that could potentially spread to every pig in the country if we're not careful and if we're moving pigs around. And so that would be a circumstance like, we have to kill these pigs. We have to kill them now because they can't spread it or whatever. Still plenty horrifying, but that's a little further in the direction of justifiable to say that. And that would be, you know, what would be a bit more reasonable definition of these constrained circumstances. In this circumstance, the only constraint is profit. Bottom line, there's no imminent need. You don't have to kill the pigs right now. You don't have to kill the pigs in this place. Bottom line, this is pure profit, and that was the entire constraint here. And so, obviously it would be just as horrifying for those individuals if it was a case of African swine fever, but it's just more of a stark and horrifying example of just how depraved this industry is, that it was just a purely profit decision.
And what are the standards set out by the AVMA? Like, how quickly do the pigs have to be killed? What standards do these companies have to follow?
Yeah, great question. So the AVMA standards state that with any depopulation method, 100% of pigs or 100% of the animals, whichever species, are to be killed throughout the process, which again, we think was likely not the case with here. And specific with ventilation shutdown, they say that 95% of pigs should be dead within an hour, which they did everything they could to keep us out, and we had to plant hidden cameras so we can't see specifically, but sort of judging by the commotion and the video and what we saw, that probably wasn't true either. Now, of course, just unimaginable horror is within the constraints of that, right? If 95% of the pigs are dying within an hour of being roasted alive, unfathomably horrifying. But in this case, they actually were in violation of that, and we actually went through and we filed a criminal livestock neglect complaint. We had an opinion from a former federal prosecutor, an opinion from a veterinarian saying, hey, this is criminal abuse. And we've just been met with every excuse imaginable for, you know, why you have video, we need full video of it. It's just like, well, you know that like everything in place is prevent, like we had to like move mountains to get this, and there was a month-long process with this whistleblower. It was so many efforts that failed. Like, it was so hard for us to get what we got, and in these conditions, if people know anything about technology, your battery life is just going to be nothing. You got steam in this room, it's super hot, and they have workers on site for 9 hours prior to this thing happening. And so one excuse after another, one deflection after another, to not do anything to prosecute the farm. And then while very aggressively coming after, you know, the people who exposed this horror show.
So no matter how bad the actual standards are, the evidence you were seeing was that Iowa Select Farms was operating even outside of those standards.
Yeah, and exactly. And it still, it didn't matter. I mean, this is, industry-wide, what we've seen, I mean, in the history of investigations of factory farms, time and time and time again, with very few exceptions throughout history, they're very willing to prosecute individual instances where they can, what's the non-speciesist word for scapegoat, but I'll go with scapegoat for now. So if there is an individual who does something particularly egregious, who's like just beating a calf or something like that, then these industry, and this actually probably works to the industry's favor, which is, you know, next level, that they'll come out and say, well, that was horrible. We're, you know, McDonald's or whoever it is, like, we're horrified by what we saw. That person has been fired and we're installing security cameras. We're committed to animal welfare and that's never going to happen again. So they're more than happy, and the legal system is right by their side at their beck and call to prosecute individual instances of harm that actually make them look good, make them look like they take this stuff seriously. But when you point out systemic, massive scale abuse, then it just doesn't happen. And unfortunately, prosecutors, even if all the facts are tied out exactly, prosecutors have discretion that they can just simply choose not to prosecute. I mean, another quick example in Sonoma County, California, where there are six DXE activists facing seven to eight felony charges each for exposing abuse. We literally have the county's, Sonoma County's animal services. So these aren't animal rights activists. This is the county's authorities, government employees of this same county, issuing a referral for criminal animal abuse to the district attorney. That has been completely ignored while, again, trying to put the people who've exposed the abuse in prison. So, I mean, the legal system, the political system has just been corrupted and weaponized for the very opposite of what it's supposed to be. And that's why we got to do what we do.
You're listening to Matt Johnson, investigator and press coordinator for Direct Action Everywhere. Matt's been describing the current state of animal rights and treatment of animals on factory farms, especially given current pandemic and quarantine conditions. And you might not know the answer to this, Matt, because I'm sure it's not well publicized, but do you have any idea how many animals have been killed with ventilation shutdown this year in the States?
Oh, yeah. Nobody knows the answer to that one. Okay. And as you say, yeah, it's nobody, they're not required. There's no requirement that they publish this information. There's no reporting requirements. No, you know, every company out there is doing everything they possibly can to keep this stuff secret. In fact, the AVMA standards, the same standards that say this stuff is acceptable, and you know, it's so nefarious because people think about vets. They're like, hey, we trust vets. Vets are the people who take care of my dog and cat. You know, the dog and cat veterinarians, their livelihood is linked to the well-being of those individual animals, right? And people still think that's what's going on with the veterinarians for the industry, and their livelihood is based entirely upon the well-being of the industry, the profit. Right. But anyway, so the AVMA standards, they specifically lay out, in addition to saying this depopulation method is acceptable, blah, 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 they talk about public perception. So they instruct these farms, make sure that people don't see this. They talk about how you can conceal what's going on. There was another farm in Minnesota that was doing ventilation shutdown. They put up like this, they stacked hay bales, probably like 15 foot high and like 100 feet long to prevent view from the road. They had massive spotlights out in the middle of the night. They had trucks planted, people sitting there all night long in these trucks wearing night vision goggles to make sure there wasn't anybody seeing what they're doing. They just go to extreme lengths to cover this stuff up. And so yeah,
these
absolutely.
Industries know that for the consumer, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, amen. And so nobody is going to volunteer this stuff, and no government entity has the power or the will to demand it. So
you mentioned that you and other activists collected video and audio recording of the actual ventilation shutdown procedure at this Iowa Select farm. And I'm going to request that you send that to me, and then I'm going to play it here. And so I'm going to warn our listeners that this audio recording will likely be disturbing, so keep that in mind if you have any sensitive listeners. But I think that it's important not just to hear the words of Matt Johnson describing these things, but to actually have that emotional connection of hearing the voices of the victims.
when you see a circumstance like this, where it's so stark and so horrifying, and where we can get some media attention and some social media attention around it, where, I mean, Iowa Select Farms, they're literally sent their employees an internal email, which we were able to get our hands on, that it says this is humane, and law enforcement, the local sheriff, the people who are ignoring our complaint of criminal livestock neglect is saying it's humane. Iowa Secretary of Agriculture is saying this is humane. And so I think, you know, the benefit is that ordinary people are looking at this like, Jesus.
When cooking animals alive over several hours is humane, what does that word mean?
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then you can and should and will hopefully, you know, rightfully question what can we believe? And truth is not much.
Well, DXC has helped to uncover connections between like the American criminal justice system and private corporations, that these connections might shock the average citizen. Can you enlighten us about some of these instances?
Yeah, so in the United States, unfortunately, our Supreme Court has effectively ruled that money equals speech. And so with certain very limited regulations, corporations and individuals really have free rein to just pour money into whatever sort of political race to have that kind of influence. Often they can do it anonymously too, so you don't even know where this money's coming from. But the instances that we do know of, yeah, massive political contributions are being paid by these factory farming corporations. It was a leading contributor to Donald Trump when he was originally elected in 2016. And I mean, we actually just had an article in the Salt Lake Tribune about the contributions to their attorney general, Sean Reyes, that are, you know, very much seem to be influencing that, where, I mean, in Utah, these activists are facing 60 plus years in prison for rescuing two dying pigs from this horrible factory farm. I mean, that just, it defies everything other than, you know, the political ties that are happening there. I mean, the FBI agents raided the farm animal sanctuaries in Utah and in Colorado, you know, to try to recover ostensibly this stolen property, these dying piglets that were worth, they're garbage to the industry. They're trash. They're about to die. They're going to be thrown in the garbage can. And that's the end of it. But now suddenly they want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars certainly pursuing this down. They have six car armadas, these big blacked out SUVs, going to these farm animal sanctuaries in these different states, trying to, you know, track this down, a peer intimidation effort, wasting hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars, you know, all in the name of doing the bidding of Smithfield and trying to shut down this kind of exposure. Like, I'm now facing potential prison time for this investigation and that sort of thing, but it does serve the purpose of highlighting just how broken this system is and how dire the need is for the change we're looking for.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that, because many DXC activists, yourself included, have shown themselves to be unintimidated by potential criminal charges or prison time. And is that part of this fight for animal rights, is pushing these conflicts into the court system? Is that part of the overall strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, you know, and this is again drawing on the lessons of history. So while I have no desire to go to prison, it does have this impact of drawing a lot of attention and drawing a lot of sympathetic attention when people say, like, wait, what? You know, I mean, the obvious questions, the questions that you're raising here too, like how is this, you know, when you expose pigs being roasted alive, like whoever is roasting those pigs alive needs to deal with, you know, needs to have some sort of justice brought upon them. And the people who are exposing it, they should be protected. They should be lauded. And here this person, you know, is being, you know, potentially thrown into prison for it. As much as it's terrifying to think about going to prison and so on, the impact that we've had, the people that we've reached, that we all have so much power at our fingertips, if we can come together and we can be strategic and we can be brave and we can harness this collective power that we have. I mean, in the immediate term, what we know for sure, tens of thousands of pigs have been spared that reality. So that's the immediate term. Now the ripple effects, you know, are much more far reaching than that. Other corporations are probably like, maybe we don't want, you know, who knows, somebody's gonna peek in here and get video footage of us. Further ripple effect, people questioning this industry. Gosh, they're lying to us about, you know, what else are they lying to us about? We really do need change. So it's just like a massive impact that we can really have if we're willing to put ourselves out there and do this kind of stuff. So
That's a good note to end on. And I could interview you for several more hours, but unfortunately we're out of time. So I'll just ask, where can people go to find out more about DXE or support DXE's work if they choose to?
Yeah, definitely. So Direct Action Everywhere on Facebook. We're very active. You can go to directactioneverywhere.com. People can contact me personally with any questions or how to get involved. email is matt@directactioneverywhere.com.
Thank you, Matt. This has been Noah Bristol with Voices for the Animals speaking with Matt Johnson of Direct Action Everywhere. It's been an honor. Thank you again for joining us. And for the listeners, Voices for the Animals airs at 10 a.m. on the fourth Friday of every month, or you can listen online anytime at kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. Until next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everybody. This is DK Home again with another new episode of Film at 11, the weekly panel show reviewing recent films from, these days, the small screen. First, there'll be a survey of some interesting things on television, and then I'll turn over the show to Jeff, Britta, and Matthew for more offerings. I'm going to concentrate on TV this week, and also reference a movie about a movie critic that I also saw on DVD. So it's still now a